Welcome to the Warrior's Way. Our warrior this week is Donnell Foster. Say good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
All right, before we get to him, if this is your first time to Spiritual Warfare Unit, if you go to our website, spiritualwarfareunit.com, and you click on struggling, if you know someone who needs help with food or baby clothes or formula or job training or schooling, whatever. We got 15 different nonprofits that we work with. You go on there. If someone's struggling, they can get the help for free. If you're struggling, go on there, help somebody, and you be the person that helps somebody. Help us, help you, help them. All right. So you are from Fenton Center of Hope.
Yes.
All right. That is the nonprofit that you're associated with, but you also have a business, a detail business called 210.
That is correct, called 210 Detailing.
All right. We're going to get to those things later, but the reason why I had wanted you guys to meet Donnell is because I got to meet him at this dinner. He's got a great story, and so we're just going to kind of hop into it. So where are you from originally? Where were you born?
So I'm born and raised in Flint, Michigan. So
which side?
South side, actually. That's funny that you pointed that out. It's really important. If you've grown up in Flint,
yep,
your badge depends on what side you came
from. Like, I'm a Stewart and DuPont kid.
Oh, okay. So you're a North side.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, I don't mess with you.
Right. See? Yeah, they didn't know there wasn't very many of us. All right. So you grew up in Flint, and how long? Like, how many years?
All my life. I didn't even leave until 2012, 2011, something like that. So, right, so I would say 30 years.
All right. So where'd you, what schools did you go to?
I went to
elementary.
Manly Elementary. I got to represent Manly. I don't even know if they're open anymore.
Yeah. Right.
You got Manly, McKinley. Are they? Okay. McKinley. And I went to Flint Central for a little bit. Southwestern. I think I went to schools of choice, and I don't know if you remember this. There was a school called Peril. Mm-mm. Peril. It was sort of like a schools of choice, like an adult school.
I gotcha. What was?
Oh, and I went to. Oh, sorry, I forgot.
There's another one.
I went to Corona High School too.
Dang.
For a small stint.
So what was the home life like growing up?
My home life was, compared to others, not so bad. I mean, I grew up poor, you know.
That's foregone conclusion.
Foregone conclusion, right?
That's my race, too.
So, okay. So, wait. Let me back this up. All right. So, grew up in a terrace. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
But if you lived in Flint, any amount of time, you do know where the terrace is.
Yes, you do.
And so, growing up there, it was, you know, just living in the neighborhood. My mom was on assistance. She didn't work. She was always,
it just your mom?
Just my mom.
Okay.
My dad would come visit.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a weird arrangement. Like, I didn't get the every other weekend father. My dad worked at GM.
Yeah.
And so to us, he had money. He was like rich.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And he would come to visit after work from, like, he'd get out at 3, he'd get there.
Gotcha.
And then he would hang out until 4 o'clock, and then he would take off.
Wow. You got
and that
hour.
Was Monday through Friday.
Okay.
And during that hour, my mom would, like, beg my dad to get us, like, Burger King or
some treat,
yeah, you know, on his dime.
Yeah.
Then he'd always get mad about it, and then he'd go and do it, and that was pretty much.
All right. So how many siblings do you have?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. Okay, so I have...
It's just a number.
It's I do believe I have 11 half brothers and sisters.
11 of them.
11
where you,
of them.
Where do you fit in that gaggle? Sorry, what, it was the right word.
Yeah, like that is the correct word, gaggle. So I didn't know any of them. I did. So you had my two sisters and brother that I consider my two sisters and brother on my mom's side. The rest I met like once when I was a child at some point during some sort of like visit or relative holiday or something.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, nothing ever since. And with my two sisters and brother, they were already grown adults. Mm-hmm. So I grew up an only child.
Oh.
And they came to visit like once when I was like...
What's the age difference there?
I'll be honest.
10, 15 years?
10, 15 years.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, like more than 10, yeah, for sure.
All right, so like with my mom, when I was growing up, she struggled with addiction. Sure. So like she would put down that down payment and then they'd have to roll her out to get her out, you know?
Yes.
And then she'd save up that money and get the down payment. When you were talking about moving school to school, like we used to do that every semester.
Yep.
Right. So that was kind of what you were going through too?
It's kind of weird, but my mom's deaf. She's deaf, not disabled, but she's diabetic. She claims to be disabled, but she just didn't work and she was on assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And she just
being deaf's tough, right?
And she was uneducated. And so, you know, she was always dependent upon a man to help her. She didn't have that. And here she is. She's just, I hate to say it. I love my mom, but she was using the system. Right.
Yeah.
So growing up for me was very different from a lot of the kids because, you know, they're getting punished, grounded. There's rules.
Yeah.
There was no rules in my house.
I did whatever.
I could do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. Just don't get yourself killed in the house is the rule.
The right? bar was don't get killed.
Don't get killed. that's how it was for me. It was I had to read my own. Like, I remember being 8 years old and pulling out food and reading the instructions on how to cook it and make it.
Yep.
Like, that was my life, right? Mm-hmm. So when I became a preteen teenager, I just started staying the night at friend's house, and I would just stay for days. And I just let mom know, like, hey, mom, I'm going here, seeing, four or five days.
Safer, better environment, more cared for, more wanted.
She just was, okay, cool. Don't bring the cops home. Got it. No problem. And I did that. And I remember, I would just take off for days, and I signed myself up for school. Wow. I took care of the administration. I just come home and go, mom, sign this.
Yeah.
And then I take care of it.
Wow.
So these in and out of schools, it was me.
So you were running yourself at 8.
I was kind of running myself. Yes.
All right. So that makes kind of sense. Your story actually kind of makes sense because you're like, well, I'm handling this, so I'm going to.
And then
if the bar is not dying, I am succeeding.
I'm winning right now.
Yeah. All right. So when did that when did the drug thing kind of like start getting a hold of you? When did that happen?
Well,
I gotta imagine early.
It's you start at 12, and it's cigarettes.
Yeah.
And it's being cool with the kids, and it's just being belonging. You know, childhood for me was tough, and it kind of led into this because I grew up in a world that was black, mm-hmm. right? But I didn't understand racism,
mm-hmm.
and so I got these white friends that lived down the street, and a lot of the people that I was friends with originally kind of turned on me, and then there was a lot of opposition there
because they had that.
So they understand
their team or their team.
Yes. And then that's when the split happened, and I started to hang out with white people. And
I love how you say that.
Did I say that kind of funny? Sorry. And that's kind of how that happened. So I moved into hanging out with these white people, and I was smoking like Marlboros and cigarettes. And then I met this guy named Jason. He lived down the street.
Yeah.
And we started smoking weed.
Okay.
And then it was weed. And then I started hanging out with the stoners.
Were you 12?
I was you know, going into junior high.
Okay, so 12, 13.
Then. Yeah, 12, 13.
All right.
And I remember going into junior high, seventh grade. I didn't know what table to sit at. Do I sit with the black people? Do I sit with white people? I didn't really know.
Yeah.
So I tried sitting with black people. And that went fine until they started to insult me viciously. And
because
I was different. I talked funny. I spoke proper, that kind of thing.
Because you didn't slang.
I didn't do the slang thing.
Wow.
And so
how dare you sound
intelligent. I don't want this. I really don't want this to make this sound like I'm like, this is not.
No, I got you.
You know, I'm not insulting my people.
No, it's just what happened.
It's just what happened. Just speaking facts. And so I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And so I just was trying to belong. That's what you do, right?
Yeah.
And then I found one friend that I knew. He hung out in the back rows of stoners, and they accepted me. And it was mixed, too. It was like Mexican. It was, you know, white people, whatever. And they were like, yeah, come on in. Be a part of our group. And they smoked weed, so I smoked weed. And then that's kind of the road. That's how that kind of started.
Yeah.
Because then I started hanging out at the trap house. You know, their parents did the same thing, where they were kind of letting us run the roost. That's just kind of how it was.
Yeah,
they were living off that GM money and selling drugs out of the house, and you know, you just kind of mess around in that world, and then that's just kind of how that happens. And I'm not, again, I know like weed's legal these days, I get all that, and you know, it's not a gateway drug, but for me it led me into that group.
So was it for you a gateway?
I mean by the definition, I would say yes. Well, I would say yes, because it led me into that world of people that allow those types of things to be a part of their life.
So now you're 13, you're hanging out, you got a group, you got your group, you're hanging out, you're doing your thing. And like, what was that like? Like that environment, did you like have any experiences where that you're like, oh man, I should probably stop this? Like any of those like moments?
No, I loved it. It was all good. I had so much fun.
So you're raising yourself.
I'm raising myself.
I just want to make sure I have this right.
Go ahead.
You're raising yourself. You're doing drugs.
Yep.
You're signing up for your classes. What's your grades like?
D's.
Oh, so you're passing.
I'm passing.
Okay. So you're passing.
C's and D's.
Yeah. Because there's no
structure. I'm not coming home and having to do homework. Mm-hmm. I did. And it's so funny you bring that up, because that's the kind of person I am. I'm the kind of person that I didn't have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I was making myself do it.
Right.
Because I felt this compulsion that I had to, I know this is important, so I'm going to do just enough to get by.
Right.
Even though there's nobody else.
It doesn't matter if I get by or not, because you knew you needed to. And maybe to stay in your peer group or something.
I guess so.
You know, you're graduating, so I got to graduate too, maybe.
Yeah, like that's what you were supposed to do. Like,
yeah.
You know, I was following that, you know, that's what I thought. You were supposed to go through school. You're supposed to pass and graduate and do all those things to, you know, then get a shop job and then become successful. Because that's what everybody in Flint was told to do.
You smoke weed, because that's what you do. Right. You didn't know?
I didn't know. Right.
That's winning. All right.
That was like the dream too, like to get the shop job.
Yeah.
Like get in the gym. That was like the dream.
Oh yeah. Cause you get in there, you're gonna make your 50, 60, 70.
I remember being 15, 16 saying that.
Yeah.
Like out loud. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, because they get in there and they hate those jobs. Like it pays good, but I mean like I remember having family members go, dude, if I need something, I'm using my brain. I can't do this. Like I respect people to go in there and do that, because I couldn't just every 38 seconds.
It's awful. I've done shop work before.
And it's awful.
It's awful. Yeah. It's so awful. I don't even know. I can't.
Hence probably why they smoke weed, because.
Yeah, because you got to get away from it. You spend eight plus hours,
so
10
this is
overtime.
On, this is going on from 13 to say, like, what? How old were you when you graduated?
I didn't graduate. I eventually did a dropout.
How long was that?
I dropped out when I was 16. Right, 16,
so like junior
17.
Year?
Junior year.
All right.
I didn't even know, honestly, I dropped out sophomore year.
Okay.
And then tried to finish my sophomore year as the junior age.
Right.
And then that was in Southwestern.
Yeah.
And I just didn't get along with everybody in school. It was just... It's not that I didn't get along with them.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, I just wasn't cool, or I wasn't hip, or yeah. I just wasn't.
Your group wasn't there.
My group wasn't there. Yeah, stoners, the ones I hung out with, were not there. And so then one day I thought, well, then I don't need. That's when I finally thought I don't need school anymore. So then I left, and I ended up getting my GED.
All right, perfect place to take a break. Okay. When we get back, we're in the second part of this. If you've not gone to spiritualwarfareunit.com, please go and do that. Check someone out. Like, share, and subscribe on the show. We will be right back. Taking a quick break from our podcast, I wanted to let you know about our life application program that we have for churches and nonprofits in the area that are trying to find programming that they can use in case the corona shuts you down and you're not able to get in. You go to spiritualwarfareunit.com. Click on our episodes, and you can check out our programs for as little as $29.99 a month to make sure that we're still getting the word out to those people that need it. Now, back to the program. All right, welcome back to the Warrior's Way. Our warrior this week is Denell Foster from Fenton Center of Hope, and he was just talking about how he was parenting himself and getting into, normal, poor upbringing is basically what I'm picking up. You're 16, 17.
And mind you, at 16, 17, you know, you got to understand, if we could back it up, I know I'm at 16, 17, but, you know, I had to teach myself about sex.
Right.
Everything I learned was from TV and from everybody that was around me that did not know what they were doing either.
So you're learning from people who don't know.
Right. And the role models are not role models. No. They have failed at being what you would deem as a role model. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm 16, 17. I'm just a horn dog.
Right.
And I'm
like,
just,
did you know when you were younger that you're like, these people don't have it figured out?
No, not at all.
Oh, you just thought that.
This was what you were supposed to do. I thought you were supposed to get as many girls as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that's what you did. That's
well, 11 siblings. I mean, that's what you do.
I didn't even understand.
Right.
You get none of that.
Right.
It's crazy to me. I look back on it and I just shake my head at what I thought dating was.
Yeah. And I we're gonna leave that alone. All right, so you're getting in there. So how long was it before you got your GED?
Got what?
Your GED, your GED.
Oh, I didn't get what you said. I thought you were saying GED.
Your GED.
No, got that when I was 18 or 19. All right. I can't remember.
What was the reason? Like, you did it for a purpose.
So I had a friend. My best friend was Jamie, and his girlfriend's name was Jamie, and they're just my closest friends. And Jamie was always the one that was going to be a success.
Okay.
She eventually broke out of that group. And I just thought, you know, oh, I could just pass a test and get the GED really quick. I can do that. Yeah. So, because I knew I was going to need.
And then you did?
And I did.
How much did you study for that?
Be honest with you, it's all foggy now, but I think it was like 2 weeks of.
Okay.
They give you all the literature.
Right.
I can't even. I tried to remember the other day what the process is. I feel like it's like 2 weeks of like study. I think you got to go to like a class for like 2 weeks and then you take the test. And that's what I did because I knew I was going to need the GED for a shop job later.
For a shot, so we're still in the shop job.
We're still on the side. That's what you got to do. That was my road to success.
All right, so you're 18, 19. You're still trying to get in the shop. Hasn't happened. Are you even applying at the shop? I mean,
oh yeah, I've been at several jobs. I had already, I was working at Royal Haven.
Okay.
I was a DJ there. Just
you're a DJ at the skating rink.
Yes, I'm sort of a D celebrity in Flint.
Hey, at least it's a passing grade. You made that clear. That's where you hit.
Yeah. They're like, oh, you used to DJ. I remember you, DJ Donnie.
DJ Diamond.
DJ Donnie. Hmm. Yep, that was the nickname. Yep.
That's cool.
Let's not talk about that.
Yeah,
let's not. But
Ricket. Sorry.
Yeah. It was just CD changers.
Yeah, two turntables and a microphone.
Yeah. I was. Anyway.
You're going to, you're 18, 19, you get your GED, and like, when does it turn from like just hanging out, partying, something more.
Okay. So, you know, 18, 19, I was smoking weed, just waking up to weed all day, all night. You hung out at a trap house. At the trap house, it was really weird. It was, you know, we played video games all the time. It was me and my buddy. And basically, we were like the greeters at the door. So, like, these grown adults were coming to the door. It's been this way since we've been like 15, 14, mm-hmm. right? You know, people come to the door, they knock. Hey, what's going on? Hey, it's blah, blah, blah here. Yeah, come on in. They're upstairs or they're in the other room. Mm-hmm. They'd sit down. We call them. Hey, blah, blah, blah's here.
Yep.
And then we would talk to them for a minute. And we were like the greeters, like, hey, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah.
You're
then they'd go upstairs. Then we'd pull it back and play our games. They'd come back down. They'd go, want some weed? And we'd go, yes. And then we would smoke the weed. And then we would all talk and then be like, yeah, we're just doing good. Just doing blah, blah, blah. And then they'd leave and watch, rinse, repeat. This happened all day until like, you know, 1 a.m.
Right.
And we would stay until 4 a.m. After getting all the roaches, and then that was my life. And then one day, the thing is though, with weed, I didn't like it.
What?
No, it was
you
weird.
Went a really long time for not liking it.
I didn't get the same high. Everybody else is just like, oh, I feel great, I laugh, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I was super paranoid and jittery. I could never think straight. I could never talk straight. I could never be who I wanted to be. I never felt like, ooh, yeah, I'm winning. Yeah. It was awful. But
I couldn't think. That's why I didn't like it.
Yeah, that's why I didn't like it. Yeah. And so I was 19. I was at my house. I was with my mom. Yeah. I was at the house. I was up in the room. I remember it vividly. I was standing in front of the big window looking outside. I'm smoking weed. And I thought to myself, I don't even like this stuff. This stuff sucks. So I quit. And then literally 1 month later, I caught my friends sneaking something downstairs in the basement. It was a group of us. Mm-hmm. We were at a friend's house. And they were like going in this other room and then leaving me behind. And mm-hmm. I was like, where did they go? So I go back there. And I... hey, what are you guys doing? They're like, and then I walked in, they're doing cocaine. And I'm like, what's going on here?
They were using your house to do.
Yeah. Oh, no. No, I'm sorry. This is another time, and I was at their house. I was at my friend's house. And they left me in the room, and then I came downstairs, and I was like, what's going on? And they're like, you're not going to tell. And I'm like, no, I don't care. And then I did my first line and felt like Superman and realized that this thing I wanted to do all day, every single day.
Oh no.
And that's
had you from the first shot.
It had me from the first jump. Rip. Mm. I just felt so great. I felt like I could say what I was thinking. I felt strong and courageous. Yeah. I felt funny. I was on. I loved it. I just wanted to shout from the rooftops, cocaine. I loved it. So, and that's what
that was the beginning.
That was the beginning of the end, right there.
How long did that marriage with cocaine last?
Ooh, man, cocaine, man. That went on until I ran out of money.
it's weird how that works.
Yeah.
Right?
Man, I remember like going to Mr. G's. Anybody remember Mr. G's?
Mm-hmm.
I used to go to Mr. G's and I would sell it and then do it and meet people. Cocaine went on for a couple of decades at least. And then that's when, you know, and then I tried to quit and, you know, obviously the addiction hit me hard and I was having problems. It affected my marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. Hold on. Back up. Wait a minute. You know, when did you get married? So when did you get married?
I got married.
Like how long in the process? You 20s, 30s?
I was 24 when I got married.
All right, so you're about 4 years into this habit of yours.
4 or 5, yep.
All right.
Yep.
Getting married, any kids at this point?
We eventually have 2 children.
Oh, eventually, so no, not yet. All right. So you're 24.
Well, when we got married? So yeah, had one when we got married, oh, okay. So yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So how are you managing that? Like, were you hiding it? What's part of it? Like, how did that work?
So she knew I did it, but she didn't know how, to the extent. Then when we got married, obviously... you know, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Because I had my friends and she had like her friends and then we had like our friends, right?
Yeah.
So there was like these worlds. Well, you get married, now they all collide.
Yeah.
I can't go to my friends to do, and you know, before. All right, I'm back up a story. I'm going to tell you a story. So she knew about the cocaine. She was like, oh, I want you doing it. And I'm like, okay, I won't do it. And I would go off and do it, and you do know. It. And she could always catch me. I always had a tell, right? Yeah. I would always like kind of, I don't know if you guys know, when you do cocaine, you chainsaw your jaws will slide side by side, and they call it like grinding or chainsawing, whatever the term is. I can't remember anymore. And my wife used to catch me all the time. Or, well, she was my girlfriend at the time. Well, anyways, we were getting married, and, you know, the marriage is going, and or the wedding's going. Wedding ceremony's over, and we're at the reception, and I'm getting super drunk. Like, way too drunk, way too early.
Yeah.
It, like, we're an hour into the reception, I'm about to, it's going down. Well, I knew that if I did cocaine, that would...
You could reel that in.
I could reel it in.
Yeah.
And so I went to my friends who were there, and I said, hey, just give me some cocaine. I did some. So I did some on our wedding day.
Oh.
She caught me. We got into a full-blown argument at the end of the wedding night, like in the middle of the street, screaming at each other. And my friends at the trap, I remember this vividly, you guys just got married. Just go home and love each other.
Just go home and love each other.
And that was your
wedding night.
That was our wedding night.
Oh.
So you asked.
Yeah.
You
know, no, that's perfect.
You don't marry those. You can't. It's impossible.
No, because each time I ask that, the holder, because most guys got a plan. This is my plan. And then eventually that plan screws up, and then and then it just falls out. So years later to your wedding night, and wedding it's already night. Just fireworks.
Yeah.
All right. Terrible. So
like, and I always thought that if I could just do it and enough time goes by, I'll calm down. She won't be able to see it, but she could always see it. She was very good at spotting it. And, you know, it.
Well, the fact that she was looking for it. That's the thing, right?
Well, yeah, so. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't go to my friend's house, so I always had to wait for, like, oh, she's staying at her parents' house for the I was trying to figure it out, like, how can I make this plan and make it happen? So
you got theme music.
The marriage did definitely make it hard, but I was finding ways.
But you
I was still able to figure it out.
You know, and I tell people, if you're as hard-headed on doing it as you are not doing it, dude, you're going to be successful. You don't have a choice but to be successful if you're going to work that hard.
Man.
Yeah, I mean, look how hard you work to do that.
I'm saying, right?
Right. So you're okay, so you're 20. How long did that go on?
Like, I guess
it stepped into even worse later,
then the divorce happened.
How long was that?
So, okay, and understand, you know, the cocaine wasn't the... My drug use and my sinful nature,
yeah,
as a person, I was just not a good person.
Sure.
And I treated her like a not good person, right? And I was abusive to her,
yeah,
physically, mentally, psychologically, emotionally. I destroyed that marriage and my relationship with my children.
How long did that take?
It took 5 years.
That's it.
That's it. 5 years. And then I remember, I just remember, I tried to get my stuff together that last year.
Yeah.
But I did pretty good of separating myself from the cocaine.
Yeah.
But I was abusing alcohol to make up for the lack of cocaine, right?
Right.
I was alcoholic at times, but the drugs of choice were always the harder drugs and not the alcohol. But alcohol became the filler. And
I remember, before you cut into that, we got to take another break.
All right.
I told you this is going to go by fast.
That's fine.
If you're not gone to Center of Hope on Fenton, Center of Hope, please check that out. FentonSoap.com. We'll be right back.
All right.
Now it's like, no way. The people that are talking about breaking the rules use their fingers to speak to each other. And that's what gangs do to communicate from point A to point B. It's almost like this has been in the Bible for 2,000 years. And people feel like it's a new thing. That is unbelievable, isn't it? That things that are happening in your life today are in here from 2,000 years ago. That's very weird. You love me too much and let me stay this way.
All right, welcome back to the Warrior's Way. Our warrior this week is Donnell Foster, and he was just getting into the stories of what happens when you're struggling with addiction. And before we get into those, I'd like to have our gem session. And our gem session, we have some funny stories that we like to tell. And being a person that grew up poor, a lot of it, when I was first going, like I said, racism wasn't a thing that my mind got.
Yep.
And so, like, and so when someone said, when you grow up, you know, what's your race? And I'm like, oh, I'm poor. And they're like, no, your race. I'm like, yeah, that's my, like, everybody I know, I hang around, we're all poor. That's what we are collectively. Right. They're like, well, how do you know that? And I'm like, well, if you're eating cereal out of a Cool Whip bowl that's stained with spaghetti sauce, you know, you're poor. And the rest of your friends do that too. It's kind of this process. And it comes from people who don't know what to do.
Oh,
teaching people that don't know what to do, right? Oh,
absolutely, man. Like, I knew I was poor when, you know, that's the thing about, like, TV. Like, you're watching TV and, like, okay, Santa Claus, right?
Yeah.
Like, I knew about Santa Claus because, I mean, we didn't have chimneys.
Right.
I'm, like, looking outside. I remember standing outside of the apartment and looking up, and I was like, well, how is Santa gonna get in that little tiny vent right there? So, you know, things like that. And but, you know, as far as poor goes, I always knew I was poor because syrup bread. Does anybody remember syrup bread? Like, syrup bread was so good. And I'll tell you how I know even more so that I was poor, because we couldn't even afford Aunt Jemima syrup. We had to get Allagar. I don't even know how to say that.
So it was explain to people what syrup bread is, because I don't think they know what you're talking about.
Okay, syrup bread is when you you take bread and you put on a plate, and then you take some syrup. And if you're lucky and you got butter, you want to put a little butter on that bread, and then you dip the bread into syrup, and then you eat it. It's delicious.
Yeah, and when you're using Allagar syrup,
that's awful.
And when you're hungry, it's amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah. And if I was lucky and there was cinnamon in the house, I'd make cinnamon bread.
Oh, yeah, cinnamon
toast bread. The sugar, cinnamon,
like butter. For me, like, for whatever reason, my mom was a hot dog macaroni and cheese person.
Okay.
So, like, if I could get a peanut butter and jelly on a hot dog bun, like, I was breaking all the rules.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
Back that up. Yes. Did you just say PB&J and hot dog?
No, not and hot dog. It's just the bun.
The bun. Okay. Yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay.
No, not adding the processed meats.
But so you could afford hot dog buns.
Yeah,
you were rich.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like 10 for 89 cents.
Oh man, you guys are ballers.
Yeah, don't hate the player. We just hate the game. All right. So here's a couple funny stories we're gonna add to the process there. So I think you said you're right about 30.
Yep.
Right? Getting into the story. Had to get a divorce, accepting your responsibilities, knew it was your fault. So, like, then what happened next?
So, I was trying to bring the marriage back, but she was done. The thing about women, they'll love you to the moon and back. They will. But, you know, they can reach a point where they're completely done with you.
Yep.
And she was just done. And it was Christmas time, I do believe. It was closing in on Christmas about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
She just kind of walked up to me, kind of gave me this look. I could see the look on her face. Mm. She just said, I'm done. This is over. And
you filled the mark.
And I knew, like, no, there's no point even fighting, begging.
Yeah.
I could see it. She was done.
Like, she's like, we're here.
We're here now. And so then I thought, oh, great. Awesome. I'm getting divorced. This is great. I'm going to party. I'm going to get strippers. I'm going to get, cause she was moving out. I didn't even have to, like, move out.
Your mind went right there.
My mind went right there. We owned a house in Flint. I owned a house in Flint, or we owned a house, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. And she was moving out, and I said, take everything. Just leave me some patio chairs. Leave me a TV. Take whatever you want. Wow. And I need my stereo. She's like, done. So she took it all, because I didn't care. I felt like, you know, this is my way of, like, making it right.
Okay.
Okay.
Man, right. You were like not a good dude, man.
I was not a good dude. She's gone. She was staying in some, I think she was staying in like Georgetown apartments.
Okay.
In Grand Blanc. I think she met a guy. And so she took off and I thought party time, right? I'm gonna get strippers, I'm getting coke, I'm calling my friends, I'm doing everything. And that's what I did, basically. So
how did that party last?
It didn't last long because what happens is, you know, at the time I was a warehouse manager for Livingston Building Materials out in Hart and Howell, I think. And so, you know, I had to be there to open the shop up at like 5 a.m, right? Mm. So that means getting up at
4. That doesn't work real well with that lifestyle.
It doesn't, because you got to stay up all night, and that's what I was doing. I was staying up all night till 2:30. Mm-hmm. I take a Xanny, pop that, fall asleep, and try to get up in 2 hours. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work.
No.
And after a while, I found myself sleeping in. I was missing days, and then one day the boss called me in and said, "Hey, listen, I love you. You know, I like you, dude, but..." Yeah.
It's been great.
It's been great.
Yep.
But we're going to have to let you go. And I was like, I understand. Because I was kind of person I am. I didn't like throw my arms up and like, what's going on? Like,
I cannot believe.
Yeah. No, I kind of like saw it and I was like, yep, got it. Yeah. And
nailed it.
So, dunk. And you know, it's so funny too. Like, strippers are really expensive. By the way. And so.
Yeah, the payoff's not really
there. They want
a
lot of money. Yeah. And not for much.
Yeah.
They don't want to give you anything for it either. So, there's no champagne in the champagne room. Yeah. There's no kissing in the champagne room. I think that's the Chris Rock song. I can't remember. Anyway, so then.
So what happened now?
So then I go to.
You lose your job.
I lose the job, and I end up finding a job at Chili's as a server.
Okay.
And that pretty much changed the game for me because I didn't realize you can make quite a bit of money in such few hours as a server.
Really?
Yeah, you can do very well. And. Huh. Not that it's not hard.
Yeah.
Because it's hard in its own right.
Yeah.
I got love for all the servers in the world. Believe me, I'm with you. Put my badge of honor for you guys. But
tap.
You can do quite well in a short amount. I wish someone had told me when I was 18, go be a server. I would have never gone to the shop or done any of that other stuff. I just went
to serve. Yeah, because it seems like it would fit your personality.
Oh, it fit perfectly. And
you're putting on a show, right?
And, you know, you go work a six-hour shift. You come out, you make a hundo or a half, you know. Yeah. And then I'd go, and now I'm out at midnight. I go hit the liquor store.
Right.
Get me some alcohol to go with my cocaine, and now I'm off to races again. I'm back in business.
You're doing this at 35.
I'm doing this at, let's see, 2005. I am, 20. Yeah. I don't know my age. Here's.
I don't know my age.
It's 2030. I'm 30.
Okay. So you're
31. 31.
So you're 30, 31, and you're just, okay. So you're still basically being a teenager, being that 13, 14.
Absolutely.
All right. And so, lost the wife. Are you seeing the kids? Or?
No, not really. I mean, I'm supposed to see them every other weekend, but not.
So then what happens, right? Like, this takes another turn, right?
Oh, my gosh, it does. So then, let's see. So
how did you meet those people to do this? Like, how did that all work?
Well, that's the thing. I'm in the cocaine world, and we're selling the trap, and... You know,
is this the same trap house when you were a kid?
The same. Wow. I'm frequenting that one.
Okay.
And other ones that I've found throughout my years. I'm partying at the bars all the time, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember here. Let's see. 2005. I was at Chili's. Yep. And then that's when, you know, I started. It just kind of went on like that. And then it was when I went to. I don't know, it was like three. Oh, I went to Myrtle Beach. That's right. Mm-hmm. So cocaine was becoming a problem for me. It was always getting a hold of me, and I knew I had an addiction problem. So I was always trying to find ways to like take off and leave and that kind of thing. Right. Yeah. So I remember it was like 2008. I was with some friends, and my friend, he did heroin. And, But I didn't do that because I was like, oh, shots, shooters, ooh, they're weird, you know. Yeah. I just do cocaine because I'm way better than you.
My addiction's not nearly as bad as your addiction.
Yeah, no. But I hung out with some friends. And
it's funny how that works, though.
That's so funny, dude. So then we ended up going to Myrtle Beach, and this was going to be our way to, like, get away from that lifestyle, right? And so, but no one tells you you're taking it with you. So right. Then I went there. And just partied. I ended up, it was hard for me to find cocaine there, but I did find it. And
with hard work and determination,
I found it. And so I found it and abused that. Then I remember moving back to Michigan again. And then I landed at Outback Steakhouse and I was mm-hmm. working there. And then I started hanging out with the old group again.
Yep.
And then that's when I ran into crack. And so
just accidentally ran into kind of ran into corner.
Yeah, was like, turned hey. The corner. And you know, I'm getting older and I'm getting I don't know if that's a word, horrier. I'm getting more pervy, perverted. Okay.
The sexual desires are getting more deviant.
They're getting kind of, so now I'm really kind of digging into more sleazier perversion in my life, and I'm looking for that.
How big a deal is like porn in your life at this point?
Oh, dude.
Massive issue.
Massive issue. And I didn't know at the time. I thought it was normal.
Yeah, like you thought
like this is what you do, right? Of course you're supposed to desire this and look at that.
And then you're supposed to find the girl that's going to do that. And
I didn't know. This was all completely normal. It's so crazy to me.
Before you get into this, we got to take another break. This is going so fast. Please go to Fenton Center of Hope and check out what they're doing. If you haven't gone to Spiritual Warfare Unit, check that out. Like, share, and subscribe, guys. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Aaron with UCAN. Just out here today at the Valley Area Agency on Aging event, Senior Power Day. It's been really cool. We haven't been in the senior world very long, and I know it always plays a part in our world. So we're here today to connect with that senior community and kind of talk about the proper use, misuse, storage, and disposal of medications, making sure that they're not only are they using them as prescribed, but also disposing them as needed. So we're also bringing a multitude of services here that I'm looking at that allow us to connect and expand on our senior care initiative. So it was twofold. Share some information with the seniors that were out here, but also make some connection with those who are servicing the senior community to be able to expand our network of our senior initiative and make some connectivity. So we've met the folks from Valley Area Agency on Aging specifically, have some cool ideas already to work with them. We'll talk to McLaren and Genesee Health Plan as far as the Medicaid sign-ups and things like that. Veterans are here. The Genesee County Services for Veterans is here. So really have some great connectivity going. Good start to our senior care. A great day here. There's a lot of people here. There's been probably 200 to 300 people here. We've been here since 9, so it's been a rewarding event. Most people do look at our table and say addiction and don't look, but there has been those handful that do come over to us and say specifically, hey, can you come to this event or can you come speak to us here or there? And that's kind of what we're after. We're really after the focus on how we can continually expand our reach into this community. So it's been a good day. We look forward to continuing the rest of the day, and we'll circle back again another time. Thanks again.
Right, all right, all right. All right, welcome back. We were just getting back with Donnell Foster, and he was just breaking into how he got into doing crack cocaine, and that was in Florida, right?
No, that was I came back from Myrtle Beach. Back
so this
to
was
Flint.
After the party?
This is after the party in Myrtle Beach. I come back to Flint, and I started working at Outback, and okay. I was... Yep, go ahead.
All right, so you find people and you're taking the next step to crack cocaine. And mm-hmm. how long did that marriage last before you jumped to the next step?
Oh, it didn't last long.
Like 6 months, a year?
Like 6 months, 8 months.
So the jump from cocaine to crack cocaine to then what was the next
one? And so then now I'm trying to move away from the addiction. So that's how I end up in at a rehab. And then I went to Roseville, and then I ended up in Oklahoma. And then it's in Oklahoma that I find worse people, and I end up getting into meth at that point.
All right, so you went from Michigan. So to get away from we're going to have this story on for another time. But having going from the cocaine to get away from it.
To get away
you
from
went to
it.
Crack cocaine. And to get away from crack cocaine, you went to...
Well, because I kept trying to move away from it. I kept trying to run. And no one was explaining to me that you can't run from something you're carrying with you.
Yeah, yeah. So you have this. Would you say if I said you had a demon on your back you're trying to escape from, and it just rode you like a horse the whole time?
That is exactly
all right. So you're going through all this, and we'll get to this at another time. But you get to this moment, and I think you had said like you're living in your car, right? And you're on heroin, and you have this moment where you're like, dude, this is not it, right?
Well, there's
that's, do I remember that right?
No, it's close.
Okay.
That's the thing. There were so many moments that leads to the penultimate moment, right?
Right, but
I get that.
So what happened in this ultimate moment?
The penultimate moment.
Yeah.
It was just, I remember being like homeless. I was sitting in this, like, it was a torn down old bingo hall, and I was in another city, mm-hmm. way outside of Oklahoma City. This is when I was in Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and I got stranded there, and my friends had left me, and I was kind of stuck there, and I didn't have a ride, and I was using, like, I was tapping into the Wi-Fi from businesses down the street just to get a connection to mm-hmm. anybody that could probably pick me up,
right.
And I was stuck there for days, and I remember I had meth. So that was good.
Yeah.
And I remember like, okay, I gotta find a place to stay.
Yeah. Right?
And so I found this like busted down bingo hall, and I remember sitting on like a pew that was off to the side, and I got pictures of it, and it's just decrepit. And I remember making a space for my meth, like to like set it up.
Make sure it was safe.
To make sure it's safe. And I took pictures. So weird. I took pictures of it like, ooh, I'm taking pictures of my drugs.
Like, look how good my life
look how
is.
Good I just did, you know? And I'm in the dark, and I'm doing this, and I'm looking around, and I just... like, what's going on here?
You had a moment of brevity.
Like, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
And that wasn't even it yet. But wow. Those were, it's just one of the many ones along the way. I knew, like, what's going on? And then that led to, and there was another time where I was in the trees of an apartment complex that I used to live in.
Hold on, you were in the tree?
So we stole a bunch of stuff from Lowe's so that we could get some money for meth. And when we stole it, we thought the cops were coming, so I told them to go down the street and turn into this apartment complex. I told them to give me the stuff. I'll go hide in these trees in the back that like surround the complex.
Okay.
And I'll hold the tools and the product, yeah. You guys take off and then come back for me later. So that's what they did. And I remember sitting there in the dark in the trees with stolen goods, listening to sirens going by, scared to death, thinking I'm about to get caught at any moment. They're going to come out with dogs or something.
Yeah.
And I was looking across, and I remember seeing the first apartment that I had when I moved there 3 years prior.
Wow.
When I moved there to start a new life. And I just kind of sunk in my stature. I walked across the street. There was a Taco Bell there.
Yeah.
That Taco Bell was the place that I was supposed to take over as general manager when I first moved there. It was my one break my friend was giving
me.
And I remember walking in there, and it was nighttime. This is big. It was nighttime,
mm-hmm.
and the manager there, her name is Joy. Joy. And she's African.
Mm-hmm.
She's so nice. She's so awesome. I love her to death.
Mm-hmm.
And she was working. She never works nights. She only works mornings.
Wow.
Only. She never worked nights. She was there that night.
Okay.
And I remember walking in there, and she looked at me. And that's been 3 years separation, right?
Yeah.
And she goes, Donnell! And I just kind of looked at her, and I just started sobbing.
Wow.
And...
man.
And she just walked over to me. She's a God-fearing woman too.
Yeah.
She hold me.
Yeah.
She says, it's okay, Donnell.
And her name's Joy?
Her name was Joy.
That's funny. Ironically funny.
Ironic, right? Yeah. And I said, I don't know what to do. Yeah. I don't know what I'm doing here. And she said, it's okay.
Yeah.
She said that it's okay, Donnell. You still got a choice.
Yeah.
She told me that you still got a choice, Donnell. I'll never forget those words.
What happened after that?
She gave me some food. She gave
me Taco Bell, I hope.
Taco Bell.
All right.
She gave me like $20, which I later spent on drugs.
Of course.
I finally got my ride back.
Yeah.
My ride came back and got me. We went, and we went back. And then that was the start to when I ended up going to somebody's house, and then this girl, she upset me. And then so I got mad and decided to go on a stealing spree at Walmart, which led to my arrest, which then led to my sobriety. And that's a whole nother story right there.
Yeah, and that'll be like our part two of it.
Yes.
Right? Because actually the girl upsetting you is the moment that led to the process of all that, right?
Yes, it is. Like, ironically, yeah. It's like...
Like what do you remember what it was that she did that upset you? Like, you remember
she
that
was
part?
Just being a jerk.
Define. She was define being
well.
A jerk.
She just wasn't. She was liking this other guy, but she was kind of pulling me into it, and she was always coming around to me. But then there was this other dude. She kept, and I was just like,
and that.
And then I got mad, and then I decided, you know, I just want to get out of here. So I took my drugs and put out of my backpack, and I'm going to go to Walmart, and I'm going to steal a bunch of stuff at 3:00 in the morning.
That's not suspicious.
It was so stupid.
It's funny how the brain, like, well, like it makes sense. When you're saying that, you're like, well, yeah, of course, man. Like,
why not, right? There's nobody there.
Yeah, so in our next episode, when we have you come back, we will start from the... going for the cocaine to crack cocaine. We'll get that because there's a number of stories I want to get in there. But, like, it's funny how, like, God produces a path forward. So we're going to skip that part because the part that's cool is you work with Bob and Jen from Center of Hope, right?
Yes.
And that's where we got to meet. Now, you have a business called 210, right?
210 Detailing, yes.
All right. And 210 Detailing is a company that details vehicles, right?
Different we do mobile things. Auto detailing, exterior, interior, paint correction.
Is this like a Googleable Facebook thing?
Right now I'm on Facebook. That's my Facebook business page. You can go to 210 Detailing, and that's okay. Where you could find me. But we will soon be Googleable, real soon.
Wow, that makes you like official, right?
That'll be when it's official, right? When I'm Googleable.
That's right. Googleable. So you started this. So you get back with Bob and Jen, who have a nonprofit that helps people with food and clothes. One of our partners that if you guys are struggling, you got to see, and they're there and they're helping you out. And like, what was that experience like with them there from Fenton Center of Hope?
You know, that's the thing is, you know, like coming up through addiction, that's a testimony, all that. I got the story. We're going to go through it, blah, yep. blah, blah. Right.
Yep.
But there's so much more yep. after that. Right. Like life doesn't stop. What do you do? Because now you got to because outside of like once you got rid of that addiction, mm-hmm. now you're trying to figure out who you are.
Right.
Right.
And what are you supposed to do?
What are you supposed to do? What yep. makes you tick? Who, yep. I didn't know who I was.
Yeah. Your purpose.
What my purpose was. Yep. And that's been my trek since leaving behind addiction. Mm-hmm. And Bob and Jennifer have been a big part of my purpose walk,
mm-hmm.
especially when it comes to serving God and serving others in a way that, you know, taught me how to not think of myself mm-hmm. and think of others. 'Cause it's so easy to think about yourself like all the time.
Right. They the ones that, helped you with like, because 2:10 is Ephesians 2:10, which is what? What's that verse?
It is, for we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works for which he has prepared us in advance to do.
And that is what you named your business
after. That is what I named my business because I was on the search to figure out what my purpose was. And my purpose has always been to serve others. And thanks to Bob and Jen, they've helped me to understand that that is one of my biggest callings, is to serve others as much as I can through my good works. And I thought, man, you know, what better way to serve people than to help give them the time that they need so that they can be able to produce their own good works and their own lives as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So your detail work helps on the inside, interior, engine?
We do engine bay, interior, exterior. I'll do paint corrections, 1-2-step polishes, 2-step corrections, actually. And, yep, that's what we do. I'll do all of that for you.
Well, that's cool. So I got a car. I'm probably going to have you do it just because I like you as a person.
All right, awesome. And, you better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, we'll get that up there and get that done. And if someone wants to go to it, they just Facebook.
They just go to my Facebook business page, 210, click on services. You'll see my services menu. And then you could just message me at 248-983-6359. You can call me on that number. And you could private message me through Facebook at my Facebook business page as well.
All right, beautiful. So before we sign off here real quick, is there anything that you wanted to, like, get across? Because I know this is the part one of a two-parter.
Sure.
But, like, out of the whole story that you started with, like, if you wanted someone, the thing that you want them to leave with at this part of the story, what is that, you know?
I don't feel like whatever you're going through that you're alone, or that it can't be overcome, right? You're not alone. You can overcome it. I think that's the biggest part. Don't feel like you're alone. Don't feel like you can't overcome it. And that's the.
So you think like God's there the whole path?
God's there the whole path, and God's trying to take you somewhere. And you just have to trust in that and have faith in that God is working on your behalf always. You got to believe that. Like, that's the biggest thing. And I'm thankful that God had always been there with me, even through all those dark moments and a lot of, I haven't gone into yet, but God had been there in so many of those dark moments in the back of my mind, like a seed sprouting. And I never let go of that. And eventually, when the right time came, it's like God said, I'm ready now. And then that's when the change came for me. But I had, there was some part of me that believed that he was back there working on my behalf. You're not alone. You can overcome it. You can do that.
Like, did you think like you weren't worth it? Like, dude, I've screwed up so much. I'm such a bad person. Like,
man,
I'm not worth the recovery.
Oh man, that was one of the biggest things that had destroyed me. I thought for a long, pretty my whole life, that I deserved everything that was coming to me, and that I wasn't good enough. I wasn't worthy enough, right? And that's just not true.
Right.
You know, people, you know that saying, you know, was it the leopard never changes his spots or whatever? I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I believe you can change it from your spots to stripes if God is there with you, if you have God on your side.
If you have help, you can do it. If you don't have help, you have no shot.
You have no shot, right? Yeah. And so that for me, man, just when you said that, I remember looking. Can I share a story?
We got a couple minutes.
All right, real quick. I remember standing in front of the mirror, and I realized that I could not. My baby's mom, my ex-wife, said, "You can't talk to the kids if not sober."
Yeah.
And I knew that couldn't happen, so I decided right then, I'm not talking to my kids anymore.
Wow,
that was another moment.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I'm so happy I'm so separated from that now.
Yeah, no, I can't wait for the other half of this story. Thank you so much for coming in, dude. I love your story. I can't wait to see how people respond. This is going to be awesome. Donnell, thanks for coming in. If you haven't gone to Fenton Center of Hope, please know that you can go there. They're one of our partners in the community to help people that are struggling, food and clothes and help and all kinds of stuff. Last chance for the day to go to spiritualwarfareunit.com. Spiritual Warfare Unit on YouTube. Like, share, and subscribe. We will see you guys next week. Do you have a nonprofit in your area that's doing a lot of work that people should know about? Feel free to contact Spiritual Warfare Unit at 810-715-9319, and we would love to have them on to see what good they're doing in the community and find out their story. Thank you so much. Too much, and let me stay this way.